You're tuned in to an hour of what's scoring locally, across the country, and around the world. Spud Sports Sunday with Ryan McKenna on 102.1 Spud FM.
Good evening and welcome to Everything Classic 102.1 Spud FM for the July 21st edition of Spud Sports Sunday, PEI's only sports talk radio show. I'm your host, Ryan McKenna, and boy, do we have a great show lined up for you guys today. In studio with me now, it's Adam Connolly, former baseball coach here on Prince Edward Island, as well as fantasy baseball guru. And on the phone, we have Jeremy Pearl, our Blue Jays report analyst. At 7:25, the great Walter Gretzky, the father of the great one. He will update us on his life as well, what he's doing these days. After 7:30, Phil Gallant of the PEI Mudmen, PEI's only senior rugby team here on PEI. He'll join me to talk about rugby and also our athlete profile of the week this week. It's Carter Yeo of Miscouche, who just recently returned from the under-18 Eastern Canadian Rugby Championships in Newfoundland. So, before we get underway with the show, we'd like to interact with you here at Spud FM. We want to hear from you guys. Check us out on Facebook, 102.1 Spud FM, and on our Twitter page as well, at Spud FM. You can also follow myself, at RyeGuy11. Spud Sports Sunday, it's broadcast live on 102.1 Spud FM, and as well as online at www.spud.fm, a division of MBS Radio. If you missed tonight's show or you want to listen to it again, the podcast version, it'll be available on our social media pages later this evening. As well, we'll post links tomorrow morning as well. It's also on iTunes. Check us out, Sports Superstation. So, let's kick things off tonight. It's Adam Connolly, Jeremy Pearl. Welcome to the show, boys.
Hello, how you doing?
Jeremy's there with us?
I am.
He's there. How you doing, man?
I am great, and ready to talk about a lot of baseball.
Sounds good to me. Well, we certainly have lots to talk about. This past week, we had the All-Star break as a season, well, a little bit over halfway, the games portion of things, but we wrapped things up, and there was certainly some winners and some losers from the first half of the season. We'll get to all of that during this course of the segment. But first, it was the All-Star game on Tuesday evening. And I want to start it off with you guys. The American League, they won the game 3-0, but I wasn't personally able to watch the game. I was here at waking up at 4 a.m. to come here for 5 a.m. for McKenna in the morning. But I hear it's a bit of a yawner. Jeremy, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was a bit of a snooze fest. I mean, 3-0. The winning run was a sacrifice fly hit by Jose Bautista. There was nothing to it. I mean, it was kind of lackluster baseball. I mean, the guys are going out there. They're obviously trying, but it just doesn't seem like it has that enthusiasm of that a game of that magnitude should. And that's why they brought in, you know, coming into the winner gets home field advantage in the World Series. But I still don't think it's doing the trick. That's really 2 years in a row where the baseball All-Star game has kind of been a bit of a dud.
Adam, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I guess if you're one of those guys who likes pitching, it would have been something that was fun to watch a little bit. But because the pitching performances were great. But as far as offensively, yeah, for all those big bats and those two lineups, there was very, very few hits. And it was tough to keep the attention, that's for sure.
And you mentioned the big bats, Adam. Like, these are the guys that are the best of the best. They're expected to put on a good performance, to hit a bunch of dingers, and to be those guys that they're paying millions upon millions upon millions of dollars for. Like, what needs to be changed for the All-Star game?
I'm really not sure what you could do. Obviously things have, with the non-steroid area, so to speak, the bats have quieted down Through the regular season as well, but yeah, the days of the 10-8 All-Star games seem to be a thing in the past for sure. That's two straight shutouts the last 2 years now, so I'm not sure what they can do to try to spice it up a little bit, but like I say, I guess if you're a pitcher, then you know, you certainly want things to stay the same, but if you're a guy that likes to see these big boppers hitting home runs and whatnot, it certainly wasn't something that would have kept your attention too much.
Jeremy, your thoughts on it? Anything that you feel as though we should change? Is it, I don't know, maybe the rules? Is it, it's a tough one.
Well, I don't know how much you can change, because if you go into changing the rules, then it's not baseball, right? We want to keep it as pure as possible. That's what the All-Star game is. But that being said, you know, no matter how much people like pitching, when it comes to an All-Star game, you want to see the hitters hit. You want to see runs. You want to see excitement. And if no one's getting on base, if no one's producing anything, that's kind of boring. It's kind of turning into a pitcher's All-Star game. I really don't know what you can do with it at this point. You have the home run derby the night before. Maybe you add some sort of skills competition to the weekend, kind of like basketball and hockey have. But for the game itself, I really don't know what you can do. It's baseball. There's not much more you can do other than throw the ball, hit the ball, and catch the ball.
But one thing that a lot of people are discussing to maybe change, I know the format of the game itself cannot be changed, but one thing that a lot of people are maybe looking for is a home field advantage part of things. Jeremy, your thoughts on having, you know, a home field advantage in the World Series picked by the winner of the All-Star game?
I'm honestly not really a fan of it. I understand why they've done it, because they used to have the games that just people weren't trying or people were backing out of. But to me, it doesn't serve the purpose it should. I don't understand why, you know, players that are representing teams that have no chance of making the playoffs are deciding who gets to have home field advantage for Game 7 of the World Series. It doesn't make sense to me. And I think last year we saw it. You know, the Detroit Tigers, they would have opened up at home over the Giants. If they had opened up at home, would they maybe not have been swept? I think home field advantage should go to the best team remaining in baseball. That's what it has been. That's what it should be.
Adam, do you feel as though the same way as Jeremy, that, you know, maybe these guys on the losing teams, like somebody like, well, you know, San Francisco Giants, they have a great team and a lot of talent on it, last place. Is there some, or I guess a better example would be the Houston Astros in last place?
Yeah, no, I agree. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense when half the guys that are participating aren't, you know, going to be eligible to play in the playoffs or, you know, even come close. So, yeah, it seems, I'm not sure. I know I get the idea what Major League Baseball was trying to do after that tie game there 10 or 12 years ago, whenever that was. But, yeah, I agree. A lot of these guys are going out there and their main goal is not to get hurt.
Which sort of defeats the purpose of the game. People are paying a lot of money.
Oh, no, I agree 100%. But, you know, these guys don't want to hurt their own teams through the rest of the regular season by getting an injury and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, to put, you know, have, like Jeremy had mentioned, having home field advantage for the World Series is pretty big stakes for sure. So to have that riding on an exhibition game doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either.
We'll see what happens. But just quickly, wrapping up the All-Star game here, biggest snub. I'm going to start with mine, and then we'll go Adam and Jeremy. I'm saying Jed Lurie. Guy, you know, formerly of Adam, you're a huge Red Sox fan, formerly with the Red Sox, got traded, and then moved again to Oakland. And the guy's been having a great year. He's just checked his stats. He's .292. Actually, going into the All-Star break, whenever they picked the teams, he was batting over .300. He has 7 home runs and 37 RBIs. Not bad for a position like shortstop, where, you know, you don't usually get that kind of production.
No, I agree for sure. As far as my snub, I would go with another Oakland Athletic, actually, Josh Donaldson. He was having a heck of a year. He had 16 home runs, I believe, 60 RBIs heading into the All-Star break. So it's definitely disappointing to see some of these guys not make the cut. Now, in Leland's defense for picking the team, American League is just stacked with the third baseman, so tough to get him in there, but, you know, that'd be the guy I'd go with.
Jeremy?
Now, I'm not sure if this really qualifies as a snub, but I think Yasiel Puig is the most disappointing person.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Sorry?
You got to be kidding me, man. Really?
Absolutely. He's been the most exciting player in baseball for the past month. I don't care that he lost the fan vote or whatever. That's probably just because the Jays and the Braves teamed up to get Freddie Freeman in, who wasn't even able to go, as well as Steve Dalivar. But Yasiel Puig has been unbelievable. The highest average in a month since Mickey Mantle. It's just ridiculous. He has to absolutely be in the All-Star game. People want the All-Star game to be exciting. It obviously hasn't been. You add someone as dynamic as Yasiel Puig into that roster, yeah, I want to see him.
No, I agree 100%. Absolutely. As we mentioned before, with the game being a little bit of a yawner, the purpose of the All-Star game is to have these exciting young players in it, and Puig can do it all. He's got a cannon of an arm in the outfield. He can steal bases. He can hit for power. He's a guy that I think should have been there as well. I can see the argument that he kind of came into the season late, but he single-handedly turned the Dodgers season around.
Akon,
we saw the same thing with Trout last year. Everyone was clamoring over Trout, and he's done the same thing this year for the Dodgers. They were 10 games under 500, and now they're leading the division. Absolutely an All-Star.
Akon, this surprises me, because normally you're not that kind of guy that jumps on these young guys kind of bandwagon. But speaking of stories in the first half of the season, Yasiel Puig, he has got to be, if not one of the biggest, if not the biggest story from the first half of the Major League Baseball season. Jeremy, we'll start with you first. Do you see Puig continuing his success in the second half?
I think so. I think he needs to avoid injuries, which he's kind of been hampered with on and off. You know, every week or so, he runs into the wall not realizing it's there, or he tries too hard to steal a base, or he does something a little over-aggressive. You know, we see, much like in Canada with Brett Laurie, we see that kind of over-aggressiveness, the not quite knowing when to go, when not to go, or, you know, holding the energy. I think he can continue it, but I'd love to see and make sure he stays healthy.
Just before we get to Adam, Yasiel Puig, the right fielder, sorry, for the Los Angeles Dodgers, batting .369 with 8 home runs and 19 RBIs. Adam.
Yeah, I think he's got all the tools. The numbers he's putting up right now are pretty much unsustainable long term. I think he's gonna, I think he'll filter off a little bit. But like Jeremy mentioned, we saw Mike Trout come up last year, and he tore it up to start, and he didn't really let up all year. So the potential and the talent is certainly still there. The biggest thing with the Dodgers will be interesting. You have to keep his bat in the lineup, but assuming that they can get healthy with Crawford and Kemp and Ethier there as well, it's going to be hard for Mattingly to get full at bats for four guys. But anyway, we'll see what happens there. But as far as Puig's talent, yeah, he's off the charts.
Taking a look now, moving on, and of course you're listening to Spud Sports Sunday on Everything Classic 102.1 Spud FM. I'm Ryan McKenna. Here in the studios we have Adam Connolly, and on the phone it's our Blue Jays report analyst Jeremy Pearl. Trade targets in the second half of the season. Buyers, sellers, who do you got, guys? Jeremy, you go first.
Well, my buyers right now are the Red Sox, the Diamondbacks, and the Tigers. And they've all been known to go after pitching, especially the Red Sox right now are being decimated by injuries, especially in their bullpen. They don't know when Buchholz is coming back. For a team that's in first place, there's a lot of instability in their rotation, in their bullpen. Tigers, they're just looking to improve. They have Verlander, who's been kind of off his game, but they have Scherzer, who's been ridiculous. They have Fister. They're kind of looking for that five spot. And the Diamondbacks, they're just looking for more pitching, as everyone is come this time of year, just trying to separate themselves from the Dodgers.
Akon, you're a huge, huge Red Sox fan. There was even rumors this week about Tim Lincecum possibly going to the Red Sox. What's the latest that you've been hearing, and what would you, as a Red Sox fan, like to see?
Well, I think the Red Sox definitely need to make a move or two, especially for the bullpen. My wish list number one would be Cliff Lee from the Phillies. I just think he would put them over the top, but I'd be very surprised to see the Phillies have win a few games lately, so I don't know if they'll be sellers or not. They definitely need some pitching. I've heard now that the Matt Garza deal with Texas kind of fell through, at least at the moment, The Sox may hop on, try to hop on him. You know, he's shown he can pitch in the AL East with the years he was with Tampa, and actually was a Red Sox killer. So he'd be a nice guy to get. Another name I've heard is Jake Peavy, who would be a nice arm to get as well.
There was a ton of scouts yesterday at his performance.
Yeah. So those would be a couple of guys that that I think would probably be available. I think that the Cubs and the White Sox, the two Chicago teams, are probably going to be looking to unload more players. Rios, I think, is available from the White Sox, and the Cubs will likely make Soriano available. So those would be a couple teams to keep an eye on, I would think.
It's going to be.
I'm also hearing Francisco Rodriguez.
Yes, yeah, I heard that as well. Boston and Detroit both looking for a closer probably right now, so he might fit the mold with either of those teams.
The great thing about Rodriguez is, you know, he's kind of bounced around from 7th to 8th to 9th inning kind of guy. So
sure.
He's very flexible in where you can put him in the bullpen, when you can bring him, when you can use him. And for a team, well, both teams now kind of looking for closers back at the end, bullpen type guys, he seems like a perfect fit for someone kind of on his later legs, but, you know, looking for that second championship.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's having a really good season.
Jeremy, you stole the words right out of my mouth. Now, we talked about potentially some of the buyers. Who are maybe some of the sellers? Are the Toronto Blue Jays a seller?
I don't think so, and we kind of talked about this last week. They're kind of in that odd, awkward in-between phase where, you know, you don't want to sell people off for next year because your roster obviously still has a lot of potential, but you don't want to be buyers and giving away prospects that could potentially be up there next year. You know, they've said, come out and said Josh Johnson isn't moving. You know, there's talk about Mark Burley maybe to the Reds, but again, I don't know if that's something that's going to really materialize. There's not a lot of players on the Jays that are super tradable. It kind of seems like a roster they might stick with.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to say.
No, I think so as well. Johnson would be the one guy that might make a little bit of sense to move simply because his contract is expiring, but
his performance, though, this year, he's been awful.
Exactly, yeah, so I don't think they'd get much for him anyway. They'd be better off holding on to him and maybe getting a draft pick out of him if someone else signs him. Like Jeremy mentioned, the rest of their team is signed for the next few years. It is still a fairly talented team, so I think they'd be better off to kind of to hold pattern and then try to regroup for next year and go from there, maybe make a move or two in the offseason, but I can't see them doing a whole heck of a lot here in the next week or so.
The rest of my sellers, though, would be the White Sox, as Adam mentioned. I think the Twins, and there's been a lot of chatter about Justin Morneau, the Canadian first baseman, as well as Houston. There are not a lot of players are selling because they're very young, but obviously Bud Norris might be, with the lack of movement kind of going on, he might be one of the higher-rated starting pitchers on the move.
Yeah, he's been very good this season as well.
Yes, he has, and I think, you know, when there isn't a ton of options available, he's kind of someone that might be, you know, the second, third, fourth best starting pitcher on the market. And I think within, you know, this year and last year, with that second wild card being in play, we've seen a lot more teams around the deadline being kind of in that awkward phase of, are we going for it or are we just going to sit back and think about next year?
You're listening to Spud Sports Sunday on Everything Classic 102.1 Spud FM. Coming up after the break, we have playoff predictions, as well as we'll break down the AL East. Adam Connolly, Jeremy Pearl on the line. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Spud Sports Sunday with Ryan McKenna on 102.1 Spud FM.
Good evening. Welcome back from the break. I'm speaking with Adam Connolly, as well as Jeremy Pearl. Recapping the first half of the MLB baseball season, it's been an interesting one so far, and actually, just as we were off the air, I was talking to Adam a little bit about, guy that's my background picture on my phone, Brian Wilson. Got him, as I like to say. Jeremy, he hasn't signed with anyone. You surprised?
A little bit, but I think it's probably not a bad thing for him. Obviously, he can get as healthy as possible. We've heard that he's kind of working out in Hawaii, which isn't a bad place to take a little break. Getting in shape, he's starting to throw for some teams, so, you know, maybe we start to see him towards the end of the season act as a middle reliever, end of the bullpen type of guy.
I know he at the start of the season, he was asking for a major league deal. Adam, do you think he would, maybe take a minor league deal and sign with a contender?
It's hard to say. I guess it would depend on how many teams are looking at him. You know, if he's got a few options with the major league contract with some weaker teams, he may choose the stability to take that. But yeah, it's hard to say. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen him around yet. I know Tommy John surgery is kind of a serious thing, but most guys are back, you know, within, you know, 10-12 months. And a lot of guys come back a lot better. Just looking at the Red Sox, John Lackey had his surgery there last year, and then he's having an active season. Yeah, so I'm a little surprised it's taken this long. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, but he could be a guy that could land on the team and give some help down the stretch.
We did just talk about two teams that are looking for end of the road or, you know, end of the bullpen type guys. So Detroit Tigers, Boston Red Sox. I don't know.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah, absolutely.
I think the city of Detroit is also looking for a lot of more guys as well. Taking a look and staying in the American League, the AL East, it's our favorite division, has the Toronto Blue Jays, as Akons, Boston Red Sox. Ugh. Disgusting, Adam. Disgusting. Taking a look at the division, what has made the Boston Red Sox so good? They have a record of 59-40, first place in the American League East. Very tight division. They're only a game up on the Tampa Bay Rays. What do you think?
They've got a lot of depth players this year. I thought Charrington in the last offseason, made some nice moves, got some character guys in. They really changed the clubhouse situation around there after a couple of rough years. So they got some good guys in there. They got, they can go righty-lefty with matchups pretty much through their lineup. Some of the guys like Johnny Gomes and Mike Karp that aren't real big names have produced, which has been huge for them. This is a big week coming up now after the Yankees game tonight. They got a 4-game set with Tampa Bay at home here the first of the week, so that could that'll make a big factor, I would think, with the division, but it should be interesting.
Jeremy?
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of what we really said all day about them, but for different reasons. Their starting pitching throughout really the season so far has been outstanding. They've gone obviously Lester and Buchholz have been superb up to this point, but now kind of dealing with injuries. The bats have been great. They've really just been revigorated with the addition of former Blue Jays manager John Farrell. It just seems to be the Boston Red Sox of old. They've kind of gotten back to their old ways. Poppy's hitting like he used to. Pedroia is, you know, that garden gnome of a second baseman that he is. Feisty little guy. He's just producing. They're just kind of back to the old Red Sox. They obviously had a down year, which happens to great teams, and now they're back. It's really kind of Back to usual
is right. Maybe not so back to usual for the New York Yankees. They're still struggling getting guys back from injury. And surprisingly, you know, they've hung in there. Record of 52-45. 6 games back in the division. 2.5 games back in the wild card. Derek Jeter, he played a couple games, and then now he's back on the disabled list. Alex Rodriguez, look as though he's going to be coming back here soon. You know, do the Red Sox, should they be concerned with somebody like the New York Yankees or somebody more so like the Tampa Bay Rays, who in their last 10 games are 9-1? They just finished sweeping the Toronto Blue Jays today.
I think the Rays are obviously the hottest team in baseball, and I think that too the Red Sox should be worried about. I don't want to say the Yankees are done, but I don't think it's going to happen for them this season. They look too old. The spark they had at the beginning of the season is not there. Jeter isn't going to be healthy this year. A-Rod has another MRI today. I don't think they're going to be able to put it together for a final push. I think the Red Sox need to worry about the Rays, who could jump them this if they, you know, take 2 out of 3 this series. And I think the Orioles, who are always just kind of pesky there, hiding in the weeds and ready to jump maybe towards the end of the season.
You're listening to Sped Sports Sunday. Adam Connolly, Jeremy Pearl joining me on the line. We're recapping the first half of the Major League Baseball season, and we're taking right now a particular look at the AL East. Adam, your opinion?
I agree with the Yankees comment. You know, you never like to write the Yankees off, so to speak, and going through their lineup, you know, seeing old Jays Castos, Overbay, and then Wells hitting 4 or 5 for them, it's really amazing they've been able to, you know, play as well as they have. You know, outside of Kuroda and Sabathia, their starting pitching isn't isn't spectacular by any means, but they've been continuing to win games. But I agree with Jeremy that I just don't think that they have what it takes this year. I don't think they're going to get much from Jeter or A-Rod. You know, Teixeira's already done for the season, so I can't see that them doing a whole heck of a lot. Tampa Bay is the team, as a Red Sox fan, that scares me the most. Boston's played them very well this year. I think they're 9-2 or 9-3 or something like that. But yeah, they're 17-2. Tampa's 17-2 in the last 19 games. I mean, they're crazy hot right now. So hopefully Boston can cool them off this week. But they're the team to watch for, I'd say.
I only got a couple minutes left here, guys. Let's get to your World Series predictions. At the start of the season on the Jeremy and Ryan Show podcast, we blew it. We made some overly awful predictions for the World Series. We had said that the Toronto Blue Jays were going to be in there, and just fair. So, and we're now at the halfway point. Where do you see yourself, well, not really yourself, but your team, I guess, going into the playoffs? Jeremy, you start us off.
I think we're going to have a rematch of the 06 World Series of St. Louis Cardinals and Detroit Tigers. I think St. Louis is just playing unbelievably well. They're St. Louis. They just kind of do what they do, and they win no matter who's pitching, no matter who's hitting, managing. It's just kind of one of those teams that is always at the top of the list. And then I think the Detroit Tigers, because, yeah, they haven't really dominated during the regular season, but I think once this team makes the playoffs, they have the depth. They have those four starters. You could go Scherzer, obviously, who's only lost once this season. You've got Verlander, who, once he gets in the playoffs, I feel like he'll be able to turn it back on. You've got Schuster. You've got Anibal Sanchez. They made it to the World Series last year. Why can't they make it to it again?
My prediction, Atlanta Braves against the Detroit Tigers, once again. I'm taking the Tigers this year, though. I love their offense. I love how great Miguel Cabrera has been. You know, a couple years ago, he wasn't regarded too highly by a lot of people because of his DUI charges and everything else that was going on with him. And now, nowadays, he's just been unbelievable. Great character guy, and he's just been smashing bombs. And I mean, for the Atlanta Braves, they've just been awesome. 55-43, they're 6.5 games up in the National League East. I feel as though this is the team, and especially with the Upton brothers and hopefully Jason Hayward, that can carry them into the postseason and beyond.
I'm going to go with, I agree with St. Louis. I think that's my team to come out of the National League. They just, top to bottom, they have such a solid lineup. They may get a shot in the arm here before long with Chris Carpenter coming back, which they didn't expect, I don't think. He's been pitching well in his rehab start, so he could be there to help out a little bit. They also have the best farm system in baseball, so if they decide to make a move here at the deadline, they certainly got the pieces to pick up somebody that's going to impact them. So they're my National League team. The American League, I'm going with Tampa Bay. The rate that they're playing right now, it's going to cool off at some point, but David Price, I think, has been the best pitcher in baseball since he came off the DL. He's their horse on the mound. Hellickson's been very good. Their offense has actually been much better than most expected it to be, so Tampa and St. Louis is what I'd have in the World Series with the Cardinals taking it.
Interesting
picks.
That would
be a lot of small ball. That'd be an interesting World Series to watch.
Indeed.
All right, that just wraps up our, well, no pun intended, but the first half of the Major League Baseball season. Jeremy Pearl, thanks for joining me. Adam Connolly in studio here. Thanks so much. We'll have you guys on once again by the end of this season. Coming up after the break, we'll take a quick break, but we'll take a look at the Spud Question of the Week, Spud Sports Sunday Question of the Week, as well as we'll chat with the great one's dad, Walter Gretzky.
1021 Spud FM. You're listening to Spud Sports Sunday with Ryan McKenna on 102.1 Spud FM.
Hey, welcome back from the break. That was awesome. Great baseball talk with a good buddy of mine, Adam Connolly, baseball guru around here, as well as former coach. And, of course, the great Jeremy Pearl. Thanks for joining me on Spud Sports Sunday. I'm Ryan McKenna. And earlier this week, the Boys and Girls Club of Summerside, they had their annual celebrity golf tournament. And it all started off with celebrity dinner on Monday at the Credit Union Place. There was a ton of big names there, including the likes of, there was Paul Coffey there, Curtis Joseph was there, there was local celebrities such as Earl Thompson, former Toronto Maple Leafs player, Doug McLean, broadcaster on Sportsnet, and Montreal Canadiens assistant coach Girard, Turk, Gallant. Now, some of the big names, the biggest name of the night, I guess you should say, Ray Bourque. He got a standing ovation when he came in. He's a longtime NHL defenseman for the Boston Bruins and a Stanley Cup winner in 2001 with the Colorado Avalanche. He was actually inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame not too long ago as well. Well, maybe it seems like a long time ago now that you think about it. I actually had the privilege of attending the dinner with the crew here at Sput FM, and I was able to talk to a few of the celebrities there before they sat down, you know, have a bite to eat. One of those legendary people, Walter Gretzky, the father of the best hockey player to ever play Wayne. Walter was one of the kindest men that I've ever talked to. He had the time of day for you. He actually asked, first off, if I wanted a picture, and I said, yeah, sure, I'll take a picture with you, but I'd also like an interview here, Walter, too. And he most certainly had time to help me do that. Actually, I got a message from someone after the show, and she said, Walter even stayed behind to help me clean up the tables that I had to serve. How nice. Here's an interview with Walter Gretzky from earlier this week.
So how many years have you been to Prince Edward Island now?
This is our fifth time.
Fifth year, and how do you like the experience?
Well, the people are different than people in Ontario because they're very friendly. No matter you see someone on the street, someone you've never seen before, they smile and talk to you. We're home. It's not quite the same.
It's a little bit different in Ontario. I go to Ryerson,
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. It's very noticeable. It's wonderful here.
Yep. So how are things with you in the restaurant business? Are things going well?
Well, I'm not in the restaurant business, but the people who have the Gretzky restaurant, mm-hmm. they're doing well. They just use the name.
They just use the name.
I go over there to eat.
Do they give you free meals?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
Oh, Wayne's doing fine. Of course, yep. He's pretty busy. He has 5 children and 3 boys and 2 girls. So he's busy with them all the time. I think he was in Vancouver, one of his boys, for baseball last week.
Trevor.
Yeah,
Trevor,
right.
He's playing some baseball.
He's quite the baseball player, yeah.
Have you got to see him play much?
No, I don't get a chance to. He was drafted by the Chicago Cubs.
Yes, he was. Yeah, he's playing in their minor league system.
Yeah,
now,
yeah. 18 years old.
That was Walter Gretzky, the father of the great one, Wayne Gretzky, in a short interview at Credit Union Place for the Boys and Girls Club of Summerside Celebrity Dinner that took place last Monday. Thanks again to Walter for doing that. It meant the world to me, and just a tremendous individual. So we also asked you guys on Facebook and our Twitter pages about the Canada Games. So in 3 weeks, we will be talking. In the next 3 weeks, we'll be talking to Canada Games athletes and coaches as they prepare for competition at the 2013 Canada Games in Sherbrooke, Quebec. This week, the Spud Sports Sunday question of the week was, I asked you guys, what sport did you guys feel was missing from the Canada Games? So one of the biggest answers that I got, rugby. In 2009, at the Summer Canada Games here on Prince Edward Island, there was rugby, and now there's not. Coming out after the break, we'll talk to Phil Gallant, a player on the PEI Mudmen, PEI's only senior rugby team, to talk about the sport. Stay tuned.
Proud to be Summerside's radio station, this is 102.1 Spud FM. You're listening to Spud Sports Sunday with Ryan McKenna on 102.1 Spud FM.
Hey, welcome back after the break. I'm Ryan McKenna, the host of Spud Sports Sunday, right here on Everything Classic 102.1 Spud FM. As promised, here's longtime veteran of rugby here on Prince Edward Island, Phil Gallant. Joining me now on Spud Sports Sunday, it's Phil Gallant of the PEI Mudmen. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be there.
Awesome. So, Phil, you are a longtime veteran of the PEI Mudmen and have played rugby for many years, according to my sources at least. How many have you played for, and how did you get started with the sport?
I've played with the Mudmen probably for about 9 years now. I got started with the sport in high school and just kind of took an interest. But as I was playing high school rugby, didn't really know much about the game. Probably spent my whole high school career running around the field not knowing what I was doing. And then it was till I decided to play provincial rugby at under 18s and under 21s where I actually got a chance to learn the game, and then after that joined the Mudmen, and that was where some of the older veterans were helped to teach me the game a little bit more, and it was able to slow down for me, and I was able to see things a little bit more clearly and develop that way.
Is there any one person that you would say, Phil, that has helped influence you along the game of rugby?
There's quite a few guys along the way, veterans. I would say when I first came to the Mudmen, a guy named Jamie Coffin was a guy who kind of took me under his wing and showed me his position. And then throughout the years, another veteran that plays with us, Ryan McDonald, is just a peer leader on the field and type of guy that just would show every young guy certain things. And those are the type of guys that I look up to and kind of mold my game around.
So what entices you to continue to come back to the game of rugby? You're 30 years old. What's driving you to continue to play?
I think a lot of it is just having a passion for the game and pretty much that feeling like when you are on the field. And rugby's much of a sport of camaraderie and the social aspect of it. We have a great group of guys, and it's just being able to see the guys like twice a week and going to practice, and it's different from any other sport in that you develop that camaraderie, and it's probably the biggest team game there is, because when somebody scores, there's no individual accolades. We don't talk about who scored the try or anything like that. It's all about the team first, and that's what I really enjoy about the game.
Very interesting point, that's for sure. Now, as a member of the PEI Mudmen, you guys are the only senior men's team on Prince Edward Island. Give our viewers our listeners an idea of who your competition is and how often do you play?
Well, we start in usually May practicing, and we play throughout the summer and the fall. We play, because we're the only team on Prince Edward Island, we play out of Nova Scotia in their league. But we actually have just recently this year joined, which is called the Maritime Elite League, which is incorporated of, there's two Halifax teams, a team from Enfield, Dartmouth, Fredericton, and St. John. And it's the best top tier teams in the Maritimes, and we're part of that.
What enticed you guys to join this league, Phil?
Well, for the last 2 years, we've been in what's called second division, which is kind of a step down. And we've been doing really well, kind of dominating that. And we thought it was the right opportunity to move up into Division One, and we did that. And this Maritime Elite, we just wanted to be able to see how we could do with the best teams in the Maritimes.
Speaking with Phil Galland on Spud Sports Sunday regarding rugby and the PEI Mudmen, PEI's only senior men's rugby team. Now, speaking of the team, how many players do you have, and how does the recruitment process happen? Because it is a senior team, and is it just on a voluntary basis, or are some of these guys recruited?
It's a little bit of both. It's pretty much a volunteer basis, but we also... we go out of our way to try to be involved with the high schools and stuff. A lot of our players are coaches within the high school system. And like rugby on PEI, especially in the high schools, is the most widely played sport in all of PEI. And so a lot of our guys, we will try to coax these players to come out, not necessarily for us, but at least go to the provincial teams, which will eventually lead to us and eventually go to play at UPEI also. So we have a great relationship with UPEI where we share a lot of players and stuff like that. So the people that are leaving high school, going to university, they still have a place to play.
Now, you had mentioned before about how the past two seasons you guys were in the Nova Scotia, both the Nova Scotia Rugby Union as well as the Maritime Second Division. So tell me a little bit about those victories and what they mean to you.
To me particularly, it was a pretty big deal. Some of the veterans that have been around the team for years, when I first joined the Mudmen, we were in First Division and we were very competitive. And then we had a period probably about 6 years ago where we lost a lot of veterans, either going away west to work or taking jobs elsewhere. But we had a very influx of losing a lot of guys. So we had to make the decision to step down to Div 2 and kind of have a rebuilding process, which we did. And now we've just our goal is to heavily recruit the young guys and kind of get a better, be better in the community and doing community events and stuff like that. and it's just worked and blossomed. And now with the Mudmen, now we have two teams, actually. We're a full club. We have a men's Div 3 team and a men's Div 1 team. And we have a range from probably about 45, 55 guys coming out to practice and working towards both of these teams. We work together, and it's just been fantastic this year. So we decided to make the move up from last year because we didn't want to overstay our welcome in the second div, just really, really beating teams by quite a lot. So now we moved up, and it's more competitive, and we just wanted to do it when we were prepared to do it.
And it's a more of a challenge for you guys as well, right?
Definitely. The games, if people have came and watched us in the last two seasons, our regular season games might have been a little bit lopsided, but the playoffs was really good rugby. It was very competitive, very close-knit games. And these games that we're playing now every Saturday is just, it's just like that. Every game can go either way, and it's, we really got to step up our game and see how we measure up against these other teams.
Now, you guys, you said that you guys play every Saturday. Whereabouts are you guys playing? Are you down in Charlottetown?
This weekend we're down in Charlottetown, and we play down at Queen Elizabeth Fields in Charlottetown. Usually game times are at 1 o'clock.
Now, talking about this season, as Phil Gallant joins me for Spud Sports Sunday, talking rugby here on Prince Edward Island, how's the team look so far?
Looks pretty good. Right now we're 3-1, so we're pretty happy with that because, like I said, going into this new division, we didn't know how we would measure up against what we call the big boys. But right now we've been holding our own pretty good, and we look pretty solid. But we have quite a few tests coming up. We have a lot of our harder games like right in the middle of the schedule, so that'll be interesting for us to see.
Now, do you feel as though the work that you guys have done with the PEI Mudmen in the community, do you feel as though it has helped grow the sport of rugby here on PEI? I know you had mentioned before how it is such a big sport now at the high school level. Do you feel as though you guys have a big part in helping grow the sport?
Yes, definitely we do. And we take a lot of pride in that. A lot of it is, I find too, in the school systems, sometimes parents aren't educated on the game. You just kind of see the perception of it, of being a very, very grueling game and very hard nose on the field. But we really encourage like proper technique. If we're teaching at the high school level, we teach safety. We teach everything that we can to help these kids grow. And also just like people don't understand the team aspect of it and how what it can do for a kid. And we try to do our best to set a positive image in the community and do community events and stuff like that to try and help raise awareness that rugby is a great game that parents should get their kids involved in.
Now, I noticed, Phil, that on the Canada Games website that there is no rugby in the 2013 edition of the Canada Games this summer in Sherbrooke, Quebec. Why is this?
I don't know. It's kind of baffling to us, too. It's disappointing because PEI right now, we've got a great crop of young talents, and it'd be nice to showcase that. Like, example, our girls team in the juniors last week in Newfoundland just won silver, and that's amazing. And we have such fabulous young rugby players, and it's very disappointing to see that, especially now sevens rugby is now going to be in the next Olympics, and they're starting to see rugby grow, especially in Canada. Canada's become a good rugby country, and it's interesting to see like where that will go, and hopefully Canada Games will have that soon enough.
Yeah, hopefully, because you know it was here on PEI just 4 years ago for 2009.
Exactly. And it would be, and that's the thing, like, we would love to be able to showcase our talent because we kind of get underestimated as a small province, but we have some fantastic rugby players and a lot of talent, and it's really, really enjoyable to go watch.
Phil Gallant joining me on Spud Sports Sunday. Phil, thanks so much for this, and best of luck this weekend and during the rest of the season with the PEI Mudmen.
Great, thanks a lot.
Phil Gallant, member of the PEI Mudmen yesterday, their game down in Charlottetown, they faced off against the Halifax Tars. Coming up after the break, we'll sit down and talk to local rugby player Carter Gill of Miscouche, who just returned from Newfoundland and Labrador for the Eastern Canadian Under 18 Rugby Championships. We'll see you after the break.
Hi, I'm Eddie Shack, and I'm listening to Spud FM.
You're listening to Spud Sports Sunday with Ryan McKenna on 102.1 Spud FM.
Hey, welcome back after the break. Ryan McKenna here in the Spud FM studios for Spud Sports Sunday, right here on Everything Classic 102.1 Spud FM. Great show so far, and it is now time for the Spud Sports Sunday Athlete Profile of the Week. This week's athlete is Carter Yeo of Miscouche, the 18-year-old son of Tammy and Craig Yeo. He recently came back from Newfoundland and Labrador, where he competed with Team PEI at the Under-18 Eastern Canadian Rugby Championships. We caught up with Carter to see what it was like for him to compete for his province. Now in line with me is a rugby player here on Prince Edward Island. He is also Spud Sports Sunday Athlete Profile of the Week. Carter Yeo. How you doing, Carter?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining me. So recently you just returned from Newfoundland and Labrador to represent PEI at the Under-18 Eastern Canadian Rugby Championships. You faced some tough competition, especially from the host team in Newfoundland. Tell me a little bit about the experience and how you guys did.
Well, it was certainly a thrilling experience. The rugby caliber was quite a bit overwhelming at first, but we adjusted quite well. Our first game against Newfoundland went a little shaky, but we learned a lot from the game and improved in the next games to follow.
Now, in a recent Journal Pioneer article, it said you guys had goals going into that tournament. Do you feel as though you guys accomplished those goals at all?
Yeah, I think we did. Like, PEI is, as you know, a little bit smaller province compared to some of the other provinces that we're competing, and I think we proved that we were there to compete, certainly, and we hit hard, as we're known for.
Now, I know, of course, you guys did not win the tournament, Carter, but how did you guys end up doing?
Well, there's four teams overall, and we ended up finishing fourth, but we had a chance to play for the bronze, which is a game we probably should have won, but we ended up losing.
And who was that against, Carter?
Nova Scotia U18.
Okay. Right on. So what's next for you rugby-wise this summer?
Well, I had a chance to play with Nova Scotia, actually, to go to Nationals in British Columbia, but I need to save some money for school, so I think I'll decline that offer. And in the fall, I'm going to Fredericton, so I might look into playing in Fredericton.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. Carter Yeo joining me for on Spud Sports Sunday for the Spud Sports Sunday Athlete Profile of the Week. So what are your plans for next year, and is rugby included in those plans?
I'm going to school for diesel mechanic technician, and I might look into playing with either the Loyalist or the UMB team.
Right on. And when will you find out about that?
Well, my uncle actually used to play with the Loyalists, so he said whenever I was looking into playing with the Loyalists, just give him a call, and he'd make a few phone calls and see what was available for me.
There you go. So recently, you graduated from Three Oaks Senior High here in Summerside, where you won three straight PEI SSA Senior AAA Rugby titles. What was it like to win 3 years in a row?
It's pretty honoring, actually. A lot of hard work obviously put into it, but it definitely paid off, certainly, and I'm glad I got to spend it with teammates that I was with.
Now, coming from a school like Miscouche growing up, you know, you didn't really necessarily were exposed to rugby. What sort of enticed you when you went to Three Oaks to pick up the game and to develop as a player?
Well, my uncle played, actually started out in Three Oaks rugby, and then he eventually played with the Loyalists. He's kind of put me towards rugby for quite a while now, so, and I heard Three Oaks always had a pretty strong rugby program, so it kind of, two and two went together, and from there I just kept playing.
Is there any one person that you would feel, Carter, has really influenced you to continue to play or has helped you develop into the player that you are now?
Oh, certainly, my coach, James Voy. He helped me a lot through the last 3 years, and I learned a lot, and he's a very respectable coach, and I'm honored to be coached by him.
Awesome. Carter Yeo joining me on Spud Sports Sunday. Carter, thanks so much for your time, and best of luck the rest of the summer and next year as well.
Thank you very much, Ryan.
Carter Yeo, this week's Spud Athlete Profile of the week. Thanks, Carter. That just about does it for the July 21st edition of Spud Sports Sunday. I hope everyone enjoyed the show and that you're able to join me once again next week right here on Everything Classic 102.1 Spud FM. Check us out on Facebook, 102.1 Spud FM, or on Twitter, at Spud FM. You can also follow me on Twitter as well, at RyeGuy11. Spud Sports Sunday is broadcast live on 102.1 Spud FM, as well as online at www.spud.fm. If you missed tonight's show or you want to have another listen to it, the podcast version will be available on our social media pages later this evening, as well as on iTunes under Sports Superstation. Thanks again for everyone tuning in. I'm Ryan McKenna. This was Spud Sports Sunday. So long now. When I think of fate's worse than death.